Hi, this is Alina and Megan, and you're listening to Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, where we dive into all things health, wellness, and fitness.
We are two certified athletic trainers, personal trainers, and nutrition coaches who met and graduated together from the University of Arkansas. And we want to do this podcast to spread our joy about treating our bodies well through nutrition, exercise, and knowledge.
Today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, we are so fortunate to have Jordan Terry with us. Jordan is also known as Adaptable Polarity on Instagram, but he actually made a huge career change from the structure and flow of buildings as an architect to that of the human body. He works as a massage therapist in Santa Barbara, California. Jordan is also a teacher of the Adaptable Polarity series, which he has up on his website for you to check out. And this episode was so fascinating for both Megan and I as we dove into Eastern and Western medicine. We highlighted some of Jordan's fantastic Instagram posts, which the artistry on his Instagram is something very different, and we linked his page in the show notes so you can check that out. We talked about things from sacred geometry to the sphenoid bone to different parts of how our body acts as a big Jenga game or its similarities and parallels to being that of a building. We both enjoyed filming this episode with Jordan, and we hope you enjoy listening. All right. Today on Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast, we welcome Jordan Terry. We are very excited to have you on our podcast. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks for having me and reaching out. First off, about myself, let's see, the shortest version is trained architect. Realized I didn't want to do anything with that. Was in service industry for a while and ended up accidentally becoming a massage therapist.
Wow. And, whoops.
yeah. And I had a wonderful trigger point mentor early on, John Harris, who's passed away. He wrote a book called Fixed Pain. And he just really, he was like, we don't know what trigger points are, but it seems like if you push on these hypersensitive areas, people get relief and they really appreciate it. And he went to the Olympics and worked on all these people and was just a wonderful man and mentor and teacher. And so that was really the start of my practice, was helping people with trigger point under the guise of massage. And then went through a whole handful of modalities, including seeing cranial sacral and being like, this is a joke, to coming back around full circle and ended up teaching it.
Wow.
Took a course called Integrated Cranial all over North America and UK and Ireland. And then that kind of pigeonholed me and recreated and just had kept learning. And basically it was one of those things of, I would go to a course and be like, oh, everyone needs this. I feel like I repeat this almost every podcast, but it was a valuable piece for me and I hope for someone else. So I'd come home that week and try to give everyone that, whether it was breathing or some new fancy technique, and then quickly realize maybe by hopefully Tuesday or Wednesday that not everybody needed that. And so I was recognizing that there's a place and space for everything to work and for everything also to not work. And so it became a creation of a series of courses that I called Adaptable Polarity. I had refound Dr. Stone's, Rudolph Stone's osteo and chiro that started polarity therapy. I came across his literature. It's all online for free. It's beautiful stuff. It's terribly written. And in it, he was talking about how he was going through Ayurvedic. And there was some stuff that had been lost over time and it needed to adapt again. That's why he was creating polarity therapy. And I just saw that and I was like, oh, there we are. And we have it. AP, Adaptable Polarity, was born. So pre-COVID, it was a series of three courses, axial skeleton for the first, visceral for the second, and the extremities for the third. I don't really know what it's going to be in its future, but I'm going to run a course this summer in Santa Cruz, and it looks like on the East Coast in Philadelphia as well.
Cool. So awesome. What was it that changed your mind about craniosacral? You said you were like, what did you say? You initially were like, this is BS. And then you kind of came around full circle. Could you go a little bit deeper into that?
Sure. It was a poor introduction where, you know, in craniosacral, there's not a lot going on. You know, pin and stretch active release techniques, very dramatic at times, and muscle testing has all this kind of flair to it. And yet craniosacral's being very still. And so she was just doing a sacral hold, and then like talking about poetry and reciting poetry. And bless her soul, she ever listens to this, Mary Sullivan, I absolutely love and respect her. But in that moment, in my ignorance, I was like, I don't understand what's going on. So it was actually a deep tissue instructor that was showing me some stuff. And I was like, whoa, where, what? That's not, you know, kind of classic deep tissue. Where'd you get that? She was like, take my cranial course. And I was like, I'm not taking cranial. She was like, no, take mine. And that was where integrated cranial came through and out. I don't even know if that's still around or she's still around, but that's Carolyn Kraskowskis Thompson. And started talking, you know, physics and gravity and fulcrums and space. And, you know, being an architect, I was like, oh, I get that. And then eventually, at some point in time, with all the study and, you know, a few thousand bodies, there's something where those two worlds kind of merged as well. And I was like, oh, now I get what she was talking about then. But from that level of consciousness that I existed at that point in time, I couldn't see or hear it.
So this is very interesting because I didn't know you were originally studied as an architect. And Megan knows what I'm about to say, but I actually, my dad is an architect. My sister finished architecture school and now she's going through the, you know, run around with working in firms and how hard that is. And my dad's dad was an architect back in Israel. So my sister's third generation architect, right? And yeah. I do what I do, working with the body. And I tell them all the time, I'm like, I feel like it's so similar in certain ways, but it's yet so different. So now you're somebody I can really ask, what are the similarities that you have seen working with people with the bodies and then working with buildings?
Oh, buildings are so much easier.
Good.
Well, for one, you know, buildings are built one way down. They're meant to receive gravity. They have to resist some tensile, you know, wind forces, depending where you are. Oh my gosh, I got to go to Taiwan with David Weinstock and neurokinetic therapy. And at Taipei 101, because that's how many floors there are, There is a giant ball to help stabilize the movement of the top of the building, because they have to also exist safely within, what do they call them there? Cyclones?
Monsoons.
Yeah, big storms.
Yeah. Oof.
So, you know, took the building that I'm in, probably the buildings that you're in, and we put them on the side, or if we put them upside down, they would collapse. They're just not built to receive gravity that way. They're also not built to defy gravity at all, which is something I like talking about, which is levity. The polarity of it all. There's gravity bringing us down, but we can lift ourselves up by our proverbial bootstraps.
Sure.
So there, right away, we're doing more complicated work than your architect family. And then you introduce diet and environment and social and emotional aspects of the human being, and it's much more complicated work. Although I think buildings do have some sort of imbued essence. There's a movie called Pi, 3.14 Pi, that version. Okay. It's a black and white psychological thriller. And in that he says, I believe that everything humans touch is infused with the spiral.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have it on our fingertips as well.
Yeah.
Well, also, like, if you look at, and I know you've posted about some things like this before, but just different triangles and sacred geometry, it's kind of in every little piece of our environment. And I know that I was reading this thing that said something about how like nature has elements of sacred geometry that are repetitive patterns. And that's very calming to our nervous system. But then we look at like certain man-made things like buildings, they will cut corners and not have those same patterns, which is a little bit more, pushes us into a more sympathetic state a little bit. And we don't even realize it or notice it. I think I listened, I don't remember where I read that or I listened to it somewhere. But I know your posts on Instagram kind of show different positions in the body and kind of you talk a little bit about that. So.
Oh yeah. The fractal nature of nature existence. And then, and then the classic battle of builders versus architects. I walk into a building. I'm like, this was built by a builder. They, you know, everything, everything's dimensional. There's no concept of flow.
Yeah.
There's like a devoid of humanity. It was like, how fast, easy, and cheap can I build this house? And sometimes not even cheap.
Done.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's funny. I just like shared something with my class a while back about this. Like I'd heard a quote on a podcast by Winston Churchill about how like we shape our buildings and then they shape us essentially. And I mean, that goes past just like our physical buildings, like to the environment that we like grow up in, like our family, our friends, our circles, our environment, but just like how I feel in a certain space versus how I feel in another space can be completely different. You don't even really register that that is why you're feeling a certain way.
Absolutely. You know?
It's fascinating once you like start paying attention to these things and like how, even just so I'm in PT school right now, like I'm studying to be a physical therapist. I will hopefully knock on wood to pass my boards and be one next year after December. But some of the like, you know, you go into like a clinic or like a hospital or like anywhere where you're supposed to be taken care of. And like, you can get like a certain vibe of being already feeling like you're being like in good hands or being taken care of based on like, just like you said, like if it's built by an architect or an artist versus like a builder, someone that was just like, okay, we're going to do this most efficiently and effectively and probably cheapest versus like making it beautiful and making it calming for like ourselves. So it's just so interesting listening to you talk about that.
Our nervous systems and all the little things that I'm sure I'm not aware of most days. Although I definitely notice when I go into, the track lighting, big, you know, I don't know why, but Target comes to mind. And it's just like, oh, or Costco, or
yeah,
and that vibes me out. And there's the growing also awareness and discussions of lights, right? I see you have some nice dark light there, Megan. Here it's still bright. This is all natural sunlight, but then almost every room, not in my house, but almost every room in many houses or at least hotel rooms when I travel, I'm going around and like covering up all the little lights because it's so bright to me.
Yeah.
We're blessed to be out in Bonny Doon, Santa Cruz, where there's really low light levels.
Yeah.
So it's not just, the shape and form, but then also the lights, the Wi-Fis, the vibrations, all of that effect in our nervous system. And you mentioned clinic and hospital. I mean, I don't think hospital is a place to heal.
They're the worst.
And how do we not get that? Especially, that's a rabbit hole, but.
This whole topic is a great rabbit hole spiral.
In terms of, what I want to go to heal is, I want, is there a plant in there? There's a series of books in the room. I hope there's some natural. I mean, you can see in here, I have white walls, but then I have this wood accent that, to me at least, that's just at least a nice deep sigh and exhale.
It was the first thing I noticed in your little rectangle that you're in with the wood.
Really amazing. This was built by an architect, this house.
It's interesting what you just said about like hospitals and plants. So I read a lot, and I read a study, and they like checked a certain hospital, patients were in one side of the hospital that faced like an outdoor space where there was greenery, and then other patients did not have a window or faced like a brick wall. And the patients that faced the greenery actually survived what I think it was a cancer type treatment, whatever the treatment was, but they, there was a very, very big difference in the survival rates. And plants are that nature. It goes back to that, like, feeling of the patterns, the sacred geometry type stuff that I originally read about. It's like, that is healing for us. So it's just kind of interesting. It always makes me think, but
I think I read that study, and I think that they even, or a parallel one, they even showed that pictures of plants.
Yes.
Just the even the pictures had a similar effect. And so I've been hooked on Brett Weinstein and Heather Hine from Hunter Gatherer's Guide to the 21st Century and the Dark Horse podcast. And they've got me thinking in evolutionary biology terms. And if you think about how long the cells of our eyes have developed, whenever I'm looking up here, I have a giant window that looks out to the woods. So I'm like checking in with the woods.
Awesome.
Yeah, we developed the ability to see, you know, all the space out here. We've gotten really fixated like this, and that's a metaphor and a literal statement. How long did it take for our eyes and to see all that we do see and still not see what we don't see, right? Because there's so many filters on the eyes. And now we're in these closed spaces, 90 degree walls, white, and lots of blue light when it shouldn't be. And don't really know. We're all part of an experiment here.
Do you follow Andrew Huberman at all? He's a professor at Stanford. He's like a neurobiology professor, I believe. But he talks about, like, I mean, all things neurobiology, but like one of the podcasts that he has a podcast, you should check it out for sure. But he talks about like that exact thing, like how we are made to like be, you know, scanning like our environment, not like looking on a phone on a fixed screen that you can like scan like vertically or whatever. But I notice like when I spend a lot of time like on my phone, I feel it's like a wound up type feeling, but like, I don't know exactly how to explain it, but I will feel like sympathetic is probably the best way to explain it. But you know, sorry, what'd you say?
Oh, I was gonna say, you probably need some form of discharge. That's my experience. Like, yeah, if I spend too long sitting here, I go outside, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I need to go touch some earth or hug a tree or go surfing.
Yeah. Just be like moving in like actual space. Like it's so, so important, and people have no idea what they're missing. So I typically spend a lot of time outside. I have a dog and I walk him multiple times a day. Usually I'm very fortunate to be in school right now where I have like, you know, random free time during the day, but now I'm in clinical rotations and the clinic that I'm at is like this massive, like, you know, sports facility, which is amazing, but like I'm inside without windows all day, every day. So I make an effort to like, if I like go to take the trash out or like take the recycling out, I will accidentally lock myself out and then walk all the way around the building just to like get extra, like just a little bit of vitamin D, you know, but I wish
casinos are well aware of this fact.
Yeah.
So we do have to talk about the fact, like about your Instagram. I want to definitely talk about this because I found your page because I was, you know, just scrolling like normal. And then I just stumbled upon your artwork. So I don't know how you do this stuff, but we're going to obviously link your page here, but your Instagram is like the most aesthetically pleasing thing I think I've ever seen on Instagram.
No, thank you.
And then also, I mean, just however you do this, I don't know if it's digital or how you do all this stuff, but it is just beautiful. So can you talk a little bit about what inspired you to do this and also how you do this?
Well, it goes back to the architect. So the way we were trained, I was actually one of the last generations that wasn't all digital CAD computer-aided design stuff. So we did a lot of hand drawing. So it was a lot of rolls and rolls and rolls of trace paper. So there was some professor along the way that He was like, if you trace something because you drew it with your hand, it becomes yours. And then you take it and you make of it from there. So pretty much 90% of everything that you see, I have hand drawn, but I may have just traced it off of something else. But I have digital models, so I take them, I place them, I position them. Sometimes I just sit and stare at, I'm gonna plug one of my favorite anatomy apps, Human Body Atlas by Visible Body, and just click on stuff and rotate through. And so that was the start of a lot of it, other than just like having a social media page for the courses. When the courses faded away, had a lot more time, and it just became more about staying involved in my anatomy geekery and love of the human body. Every time I look at something, there's an architect, I don't know if your family's ever mentioned Le Corbusier.
Probably.
Probably French, real attitude, brilliant guy. But he used to talk about people, they look at architecture, but I'm now comparing it to the human body. They look at it or don't look at it at all. And he said, eyes that do not see, that which do not see. And he was referring to that, back to viewing the world, scanning, seeing in your periphery versus that narrow, like I'm going in, I'm going to work, I'm getting my McDonald's and I'm going. and so that was the original, is just explorations and kind of teaching myself through drawing it. That was another architectural background training, was to know something, draw it, and somehow that really works for me. That was the first series, and then they just start getting random from there to, like, you know, it's always influenced by clients as well that might come and see me and might have a specific odd bone alignment or something continually going on in the hips, or had a cranial fixation for a while there as well. And then the last series I did, cranked out like 60 images pretty good and consistently, and then I think it took me about 2 months to do the last six. But I did from the feet up, so every major joint complex, so feet as one, knees, hips, spine, shoulders, down to the hands, and then finish with the cranium, and just called it a human architecture series. And so that was looking at arches. I have a theory that the first human to create an arch was looking at like a bone or a fragment, like the skull of a deceased enemy or loved one or something, and was just like, I wonder, and then started putting bricks together, and then realized if I fit this last stone in here like this whole little thing, and you know, I'm only building a model, another architect thing, you start with a model, you don't kill anybody, and then you build bigger and bigger from there. I went over arches of the body, so that's how we handle gravity and compression, and then of course the polarity of that, the levity, and so I call those chains, right? And so how we lift ourselves out of gravity, and just started drawing these different individual parts and seeing it in new ways and kind of blowing my own mind. And it's just nice to hear that it touched a few other people.
Yeah, no, it's amazing to look at.
I want to talk about one post. You were talking about arches, and I know you talk a lot about arches, and I think it's very interesting, but I want to read what you wrote for one post here, because I think it's just so amazing. And it's,
well, I'm being quoted.
You're about to be quoted. It's the post you did, this drawing of the sphenoid, which I don't think people realize is as important as it is. But you wrote, in architecture, it is a central stone at the summit of an arch. Once put into place, the scaffolding may be removed and the arch will maintain its structural integrity. In the human body, keystones are principal bones that all other structures' alignment are dependent. This is why an ankle can affect the whole or opposite pole of the cranium, create full body trickle-down effects. The major differentiation between a human keystone and that of an arch is that the human keystone must work in both compression and intention. The key factor of a human body keystones help one locate them where arches and chains apexes intersect. I just thought that was so cool. And then how you talked about the sphenoid, because technically the sphenoid, the temporal bones correlate with the sphenoid. So you're just like hitting points that I've learned in other courses, and then you're putting this amazing image. So for people that are listening, like, this is a must follow, because your page is unbelievable, really.
Thank you so much.
It's just so cool.
Slowly through consistency of showing up. Well, first off, that was wild to hear my own words read out loud. And it was kind of like, oh shit, I said that.
It's really good. That is like that is so great.
And that's the simplest way I can put in view of what adaptable polarity is the looking at the both and.
So, yeah.
Does it work in compression? Yes. All right, then we have something important. Does it work also in tension? Well, not as much. All right, well, then it's there. It has its usefulness, but when we have that both and, that's the landing on the keystones. But I just got sent this in the mail, and it's about like plugging it.
Oh,
that's interesting. Old book, like,
oh, cool.
Really cool.
Wow, that's amazing.
I think my next series, these are going to be like all the background. I did one just recently and I was like, oh, so that's the future to come of having kind of some old school, I don't even know it. You know what it looks like? It looks like it's like MRI scans or actual actual anatomical imaging. And then they just like colored over it. And the book's so old, I can't even find a date.
That's so awesome.
Wow.
And Atlas of Human Anatomy by Werner Spalteholz, University of Leipzig?
Not sure, but someone far away.
Someone saw that and sent it to me. So
it's in your possession now. I'm very interested to see what you do with that. It's just really cool. Yeah, I think just the parallels between architecture and like coming from such a different field into working with the human body. Cause I mean, I actually met another girl who her whole family was physical therapists or occupational therapists, and she was an architect. And she said she like met a lot of people with like mixed families like that. Right. And then I asked my sister and she was like, I don't know. Yeah. So it's just interesting the parallels between the two professions and how you are able to use your knowledge of architecture and drawing and all this to really mesh the two and like broadcast it to the world. So it's really cool. Yeah.
Well, I think as a massage therapist, like obviously you talked about like, you know, trigger points and people, you know, go to get massages because they have pain or something, or maybe they just like massages because it's good for your soul, good for your body. But just having an understanding of how to create a sound structure as an architect, and then understanding like human movement and position and like what the results can be from being in a certain position or how to get into a different position. I feel like that is just like, it's a very unique just combination. And I just think it's so cool because I had no idea. Evelina didn't have any idea that you were an architect either.
Yeah,
but it does make a lot more sense now how your page is and that you're an architect.
Yes,
definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Every once in a while, either a client or family or someone I meet, and they're like, "Well, you know, oh, you went to university. What did you go for?" And I'm like, "Oh, architecture." And they're like, "And you're doing this?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Yeah," and it makes perfect sense. I remember hearing a depth psychologist speak once, and she was referring to string theory, not in the unified field physics and Einstein stuff, but our own personal lives. And if we look at our own personal lives, we can tie a string theory through these choice points of our path that have led us. And when we look back on it, at least within personal reflection and introspection, it's like, oh yeah, that's so easy. And mm-hmm. So for me, architecture, kind of confusing because, yeah, basically I took a careers in architecture course the last semester of my senior year because I needed one more elective credit. And I went, ooh, this isn't what I want to do. Because it was all about being stuck on computers and not the drafting and the design. You didn't get that until you were old and pissed off and broke in the architecture field is what I was learning. And so, you know, I didn't know and I wandered, and not all those that wander are lost. And yeah, it was actually my dear old friend was getting signed up for the massage course, and the director turned because I was there and was like, what about you? Mm-hmm. And that was choice point right there.
Wow.
Yes or a no. And it took me in a really unique direction, and then started becoming clear, and is more and more clear. Now I'm also doing a lot of design for people, either logos or images that they want to see.
Yeah, and I could see your business going in that direction, because your stuff is just so amazing. And you understand the human body. So a lot of times people will contact somebody to do a logo for them, but then that person doesn't really know what they're looking for. But you understand that all the aspects. So I could see that for you.
Cool. Thanks. The last little thing I was going to say is just the training that we got in massage school was iteration and feedback, iteration and feedback. And so most of the people I've worked with so far, that's worked really well. And they enjoy being involved in the process instead of me being this like, well, I'm going to do and make and create, and then you pay me. It's this fun little feedback where... So in the tarot, there's the magician card. That's by far my favorite. And he's got his like wand holding up, but he's looking down. He's pulling down the anything, the everything. Yeah. And then down at the bottom is an architect's table with all these tools on it. And so what I'm really enjoying is helping someone be part of that, their own process. And at the end, they have an image of something that they could never do or create. And I'm just facilitating. Just like if I was helping somebody with their body and their pain, no difference. Yeah. I'm just facilitating, pulling that all in. I'm like, oh, that's really weird. You rolled this ankle 19 times and you never looked at this, but you have a shoulder problem. Like, let's go look at the ankle. Let's go see what's up down there.
Trust me. Just trust me as they're looking at you like you're crazy.
How's this connected to my shoulder? Well, do you want me to disconnect your foot and see how disconnected that is? Because that really sucks.
I don't know why it's hard for people to understand that things like that could be connected, because to me, it's so obvious.
If you compare it to a building, literally just compare it to a building or Jenga.
Yeah, really.
Everyone's played Jenga. I mean, we're not quite like Jenga, but you get
kind of.
I think people would get the point with that, but. Yeah. So one thing that I am personally really interested in is just like trigger points as well, because we really don't understand what it is exactly that is going on with them, or like why they are the way they are. I feel like dry needling or other types of therapy that is like going deeper into the muscle, or, you know, trigger point therapy is obviously impacting the nervous system in some way. Do you have any theories as to what exactly is going on there, just from a personal like anecdotal experience having worked with so many bodies?
But I do think I have some theories. One is whether they're real or not, the pain patterns are really real and replicable, and people will come in and draw them. You know, like they're like, I have this pain over my chest and you know, Or I got this pain, you know, back here on the shoulder blade. And I'm like, scalenes. And they're like, no, it's here, not here, here. Yeah. And I'm like, watch, just watch. So to mention John Harris, my mentor again, he taught us it was a frozen sarcomere. So now you're talking muscle spindles.
Like frozen, like just like pausing, stuck where it is, or what?
Yeah, stuck. So it would be the nervous system saying, I can't let that go. And so, yeah, like most recently, a kettlebell lifter that I just did a post with. If I had followed trigger point protocol, I would have been pushing on his infraspinatus, which my mentor called the shit and puke muscle, because it's just a thin muscle and nerve and then a bone. So you push on that thing and it zings.
Yeah.
But that duplicated the pain. And so a trigger point therapy, as I was trained, it was like, well, you do that until it dissolves. Really quick segue into what I think is happening there with any sort of deep work that is painful, whether it's called trigger point or deep tissue, because you're putting an elbow into someone's glutes. Mm-hmm. What I think you're doing, what I think we're doing physiologically, is we are basically contained sponges, right? Mm-hmm. Skin keeps it in most of it till we sweat. Mm-hmm. And so when we put pressure in, we're displacing water and blood flow throughout the rest of the body. And then if we push and do it hard enough, that person's going to start breathing in a way that they haven't been breathing before. So now you have an alteration in neurology and displacement of blood flow with an accentuated breathing pattern. You're going to experience change. You're going to experience endogenous endorphins, like what are they called? They're cannabinoids. There are in our own pharmacopoeia that give us a good buzz after a deep tissue massage.
Yeah.
But as to the actual, you know, that's just the same to me of saying that they don't exist when we have this real pattern and identification of them, as, you know, surgeons saying that meridians don't exist while they use the layer in between, while they use fascial layers to dissect the human body to see if they can find and disprove that there aren't meridians.
Yeah.
I may not have said that really well, but Dr. Kyoen in The Spark and the Machine, he just laughs. He's a Eastern and Western trained doc.
Oh my God. That's like the only kind I want to listen to, honestly.
He's good. Spark and the Machine, then you would love it. Okay. K-E-O-W-N. Really, okay. Really cool stuff.
Yeah.
But yes, yeah, so I use trigger point patterns all the time, because they are real to the client, and the mm-hmm. client really doesn't care to argue otherwise or debate on the internet endlessly. And you know, to be less wrong, I do appreciate from the evidence-based crew and community, I really appreciate that. That's a really good challenge, and I must thank them for that. But at the end of the day, is that client educated as honestly as possible within my scope? Do they feel better, and do they have some way to self-empower and take care of themselves? Mm-hmm. Or do I have them on a 40 track, gotta come 3 times a week and see me, thank you very much, bank account?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's such a shame that, like, I mean, obviously I'm in school right now, so it's all about, you know, the best evidence to be the best practitioner that we can, which there's so much value in that, obviously, but there's some things that, like, it's just impossible to, like, research these things, you know, or like nutrition research. I mean, most of that is like epidemiological, because obviously having people actually control what they eat, you know, it's really difficult to do. So there's some things that I think we just have to, like, unfortunately for me, like, you just need more experience, you know, and you need to just pay attention and see patterns and talk to people and observe them and help them and see, like, what it is that actually makes a difference. Because obviously, you know, you got to have a balance of both, which is why I'm definitely going to look at that doctor. Because what did you say, Dr. How did you spell that last name again?
K-E-O-W-N.
Okay.
Kyoen.
Sweet. We will definitely look that up and check into that, because that is fascinating. And I think that just someone who has, you know, the best of both worlds would be the best at kind of being able to synthesize what they've learned in either one. So
I must have. Oh, wait, I can plug it. Hold on, it's right here.
Oh, yay. I was just going to, like, Google search it, but perfect.
Oh, cool.
Spark in the Machine. Okay, cool. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. And how much do I love that? You know, of course, the Da Vinci and the proportions. And
yeah.
Yeah. Daniel. Nice. Yo, and
okay. Cool. We will definitely put that in the show notes.
Yeah, we will. Very cool. There's something also to be said about Eastern medicine in general, and that anecdotal research of years and years, 5,000 years of using acupuncture. And I mean, I've done this stuff and I know it works. So I think that there's just really something to be said in all that. So it's kind of just continuing off what you said. At the end of the day, is the person going home and do they feel better?
Yeah. And the research is, as we all know, is weird, difficult, bought and paid for. Are you doing it in a fractal healing space? Are you doing it in a boxed, toxic environment?
Yeah.
And then another thing in adaptable polarity that I know no other, and I don't even call it a modality, but that just works well for boxes for people's heads, welcomes everything, like everything you've ever learned, bring it, don't forget it, because it's going to have its place in space at some point in time. Mm-hmm. And then other times, like, you know, it's building your tool bag to then being a tool shed to then having a tool warehouse.
Yes.
And how do you listen to their body and yourself and access those tools? Because yeah, if you only have a hammer, then everything starts looking like a nail.
Yeah.
Gonna put it all away. But yeah, as you're saying, building one's experience and the anecdotalness, how much of that? So one of the things is that all these modalities become tools, and the tools are only as good as the practitioner holding them. So I could take a hammer and I could go build you a chair or a house, and then give someone else a hammer, and you know, they can't build anything and they broke their thumb. So every modality, you know, people like to debunk, but put in the hands of someone that is there with it, is present with the client, start doing all these things, and then real magic happens. And magic's right. Only just science we don't understand yet.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's just goes to say, like, you know, touching people and working with them and just having, like, having them feel safe in your hands, that is such an important piece of, like, working with people as well. So something you can't really teach. It's kind of like you can't make someone artistic. That's not artistic, unfortunately, which is kind of a bummer. I mean, maybe you can. I feel like you can't. But yeah. Anyway, that's another rabbit hole.
I think I'm in training.
Go ahead, Alina.
I was just going to say, people that want to contact you, reach you, do a session with you, tell us just where you're located. I know you told us earlier before, and then how they can contact you.
Yeah. So Santa Cruz, California, top of the Monterey Bay, just south of San Francisco and San Jose. But these days, most people are contacting through either Instagram or email. Sure. @gmail.com. Instagram's easy, adaptable polarity.
Yeah, and we'll link all that too.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And everybody follow his page, because it's just cool to look at, even if you don't like have any interest in the human body, which I don't know who wouldn't, but especially if you're listening to our podcast.
I would hope that you would look at it and then somehow be a little bit more interested in
it. Yeah, totally, for sure. Okay, so our last question for you that we ask all of our guests is, what do you do every day, or at least most days, to move your brain, move your body, or both?
Oh, well, I don't get to every day, although I like to every day, but mine's surfing, 100%.
Ooh.
Connection, getting out in the water, turning my back on the world, looking out to the horizon, altered breath work, variable, you know, movement patterns. I do only surf with one foot forward. I'd be a lot cooler if I did the other way around, but surfing is hard. Like, no joke. Early on, when I was just mediocre at best, and friends would come and want to learn surf, and I'd be like, yeah, great. And now I'm like, nah, go take a lesson, go pay somebody else. It's hard. The timing, the effort. And then up here in Santa Cruz, our water's never warm. So we're all in thick wetsuits most of the year. But I find that it's a mind, body, soul. You know, I'll say to some people that I'm going to church, and they know I mean I'm going to surf. And then slowly over time, since I've only lived up in Santa Cruz for the past few years, it develops into a little community as well. It's also become a little bit, here's a thing for the infectious mind. I got caught in my own, fortunately in my own awareness, when I went to Baja last winter. And Baja, California is way more remote, but still got tons of surf. And we were surfing this remote spot, and it was just like me and our buds for a couple days. And then just this couple showed up. And it was like, fine, there's tons of waves, no problem. But he paddles past and he's just like stoked on life and so happy. And I just noticed that I had this like, there's too many surfers in the water attitude and recognized that. And I was like, you know, I'm going to let that go. I've actually had I've just called them New Year's resolutions, but that's just what they've become because of the timing. And one is when someone drops in on you, like there can be potential of two people going on one wave and it could be dangerous. And a lot of people use that opportunity to be righteous and bark at the other person and yell and curse and whatever. And I cut that out and I just like give thumbs up or I say go. And I love it so much because it catches people so off guard. They're so used to having their guard up. They're so used to just energetically being like this, that when they turn around and I'm like, like, it's a pleasure to share a wave with you. Like, of all the things in all the world that we get to do. And how hard I was just mentioning that surfing is, we were on the wave at the same time and no concussions, no blood, and both our boats are fine. Like, dude, high five. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's the one. And then the second is to just start infecting the lineup. So I hoot and holler a lot more when people get good waves. I hoot and holler at my own waves. Probably some people are laughing at me behind my back, but there's been several times now where myself and a couple others, we made it fun. We changed all these grumpy guys and this competition. And it's wild. And so it's a nice microcosm to remember to bring that stoke back to land, right? Like a part of the hero's journey is to also bring something back to the when you return from all that, so that you can create an alchemy for not just yourself, but be infectious, right? That one change in a relationship of any kind, even me just looking at a plant out here, if I change the way I view it, then our whole alchemy changes. And so there you go. That's my answer.
That's
for you.
Awesome.
I love that.
I love your energy. I just really like this interview. I thought that I really like your vibe, your energy. It was fun.
Same. It was really fun. It was also great because it was like no prep, no nothing, just dive in.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
It's how we roll.
Well, you made my day, so I really truly appreciate it. It was really a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you both. Pleasure to meet you, Megan and Alina.
Thank you for coming on our show. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Move Your Brain, Move Your Body podcast. Join in every week as we release new episodes.
Subscribe or leave us a rating at Apple Podcasts. If you have questions or topics to cover, please email moveyourbb@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram @moveyourbb.